Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. Mark Reardon.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Mark Reardon.
There's all these new words that are just meant to keep one person from disagreeing with another person's position.
And you have to be pithy. What do I mean by pithy? How about this? Republicans want to kill your kids.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
I love that open. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We are live at another Fish Fry Friday. We have a live roundtable coming up here at St. Mary Magdalene in Brentwood on a kind of a rainy, soggy Friday afternoon. Sue, the rain earlier, I sent Sue a text message a couple hours ago. I said, I think traffic is going to go for like 7 minutes this afternoon, each report, because it was very little visibility. We're at a lull right now, though, which is good.
Yeah, that's true. If it holds out, then we'll be fine. Back to 45 seconds.
We'll see about that. You do your thing, though, this afternoon, and we'll have Sue's News live out here with, I'm sure, a big fan of Sue's News fans in about an hour. Are you wearing your T-shirt today?
No, but I have one somewhere.
Fred has his. He's got his Sue's News T-shirt.
I mean, Fred is, well, he's a Hall of Famer.
And that reminded me, Sue, I still have Kenny Wallace's.
I haven't put
that up on eBay, so I'm going to get it to Kenny,
good.
And we'll make sure that we get it to him. Let's introduce the panel. Jane Duker, how are you?
I am doing great.
This is an interesting roundtable heading into next week with the election.
Yes.
We're going to have a lot of fun talking about it. None of us have any money left as well, so we have that in common this afternoon.
That's right.
John Gaskins here, Democrat lobbyist in Jeff City. How are you, John?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Get real close to those mics as we're out here. And then Greg Keller, the one, the only Republican consultant, the founder of Atlas Strategy Group. Greg, how are you?
Great. Glad to be here. Thank you.
And his hair is great.
The hair came in separately through a different door.
It did. It did.
My.
It has its own security detail.
So the Dow was down 2,200 points, down 5.5 points. The 52-week high in this market has been 45,000, which wasn't too long ago. The 52-week low was 37,611. We're sitting just barely above that right now. Greg, I'm going to start with you because, look, I'm not the biggest fan of what's happening with the tariffs right now. There's an indication that some of these other countries are already lowering tariffs. So if this is a grand negotiation, I'm good with it. I do think that we have to exercise patience. It's not like he didn't tell us that some of this was going to happen, for sure. But, a little jittery. I'd like to retire at some point. I work in radio. It's not a growth industry, Keller.
I think we're about to see the kind of growth that we haven't seen since Ronald Reagan following this. I think there's been a couple days worth of a little bit of market churn. Listen, Donald Trump campaigned on this. He said that we should have reciprocal tariffs, which is to say, when a country is tariffing us, we should tariff them at the same level. So recall that. Every time you see some premier or some regional premier from a commie state like Canada, recall to yourself that all we're doing is treating them in the exact same fashion that they have always treated us. GM just announced this week that they are onshoring more of their vehicle manufacturing than they ever have before. Vietnam said that they, yes, want to move their tariffs down. Cambodia said, yes, they want to move their tariffs down. The UK said, yes, they want to move their tariffs down. This thing is already working. I wouldn't worry too much about a couple days' worth of market churn.
Well, there's no doubt that this could go back. Look, I even mentioned that you had a market that was at this previous low level not too long ago in October. Mm-hmm. However, having said that, I hope you're right. And President Trump yesterday was talking about booms and how this is going to be the best economy ever. Look, there is going to be a point where this is going to be pretty easy to call balls and strikes on whether or not this is working. So I get it. Let's play. This is my friend Bachi Ongar-Sargon, who I call her my favorite reformed lefty. But she was on Fox talking about how the president is prioritizing working class people.
You know, it's so amazing. This morning on one of the liberal channels, I saw a Democrat congressman, and he was just sitting there saying, I have no idea why President Trump is doing this. They simply cannot understand why he is implementing the tariffs, because the answer is simple. He is choosing Main Street over Wall Street.
I think to a certain extent that's true, but, you know, there's a lot of Main Street that has 401ks, right?
Yeah, and here's the thing. Remember, if there was ever a dip in, you know, the stock prices and in Wall Street, he would say, okay, yeah, Joe Biden ought to just resign. Just resign, you're terrible. I mean, he doesn't live by his own criticisms. I mean, it's you know, so if this were Joe Biden and the market went down, he would have a coronary and say resign. And now it's not. Now it's irrelevant. So look, let me know when we get through China and we get that one figured out. That's going to be the one that is determinative as to whether this is going to work.
The concern that I have is really more broader. I mean, I can certainly be selfish about my 401k, and a lot of us are going to take a look at that.
We're old enough to.
Right, exactly. No, look, when it comes to the economy, we're coming off a year where we had 2.8% growth, which is faster than every other developed economy. The unemployment rate was 4.1, inflation 2.8, stocks were at record highs. So we're not there anymore. And we probably were maybe slipping into a recession even before any of this happened, because some of this is residual and there have been some warning signs in the economy. Having said that, you know, Greg, I don't want to go back to you because John hasn't anything to say. I think there is going to be a lot of focus, because you're going to go, I'm saying August is my marker. Let's give it a few months and see where this is right now, because I think in fairness, you do have to give some of this time. And by the way, we could be sitting here next week when this market's sitting at 38,000 right now. It could be 42, could be 43. We don't know, because we've seen these things happen. This is a little bit bigger correction, right? But we've seen it swing back as well.
Yeah, you know, I was down at the MAC earlier today, and it's interesting how you sit in the locker room and just listen to sidebar conversations. And listening to a couple business leaders who were pretty big timers in this town to say that they're concerned.
Right.
I'm not saying who it was, but that's telling. That's a very, very telltale. I think a lot of people are concerned. People like yourselves, Jane, you all are near retirement age. You all have worked hard. And if you're sitting looking at your balance sheets, looking at the market, that is scary.
Right.
You know, when you're ready to retire, there's no time for no market correction.
Yeah, you have
you're
time.
Trying to make a decision.
Hey, quit rubbing in our old age, guess.
No,
okay,
no, no,
first
no.
of all,
but
thanks
all
a lot for that.
I think there's a real question and concern there, and we're too far along the road to Avalon
well,
to blame the previous administration.
If this keeps cratering, then yes. But again, there's a lot of sell-off today.
And I want to be clear. Every American should want our economy to be the strongest that it can be. No one is cheering to ask this man not to be successful, because all of us rely too much on the American economy for our day-to-day life.
But there
are some concerns.
I'm still young and beautiful, so I don't worry so much about retirement. But I will say that the stock market is exactly where it was in April of last year.
Yeah.
What happened was the stock market was where it was. Then Donald Trump got in. Everyone got excited because Republicans are actually a capitalist party compared to Democrat party. And it went up. As a result, it is now back to the exact same level it was in April of last year. The jobs numbers came out this week. What we are learning is that all of those GDP numbers, all of those jobs numbers under Biden were total. It was a complete Potemkin village. It was all driven by government spending and government jobs. We are, for the first time in 4 years, growing actual private sector jobs, which never happened under Biden because it was all spent on government employees, middle-level federal government employees, driven by deficit spending. this is a real economic renaissance we're about to undergo.
You did say, oh, Biden, didn't you?
He
I
did.
Like that. That's pretty good.
It was kind of
like
great.
Look, I understand the overall goals here, but let's talk about manufacturing in this country, because the reality is the manufacturing base has been disappearing since we were born, Jane, since
absolutely.
The 1960s. So
absolutely.
This is not something that's going to come back in a few years.
No.
Now, if we're going to remake the economy for working class people, I get that, and let's hope that we can bring back manufacturing. But that is
a multi-decade
process. That
correct.
Is not a three-year plan.
I think we need to be very strategic about what sort of industries we actually chase. So, the car industry, that's there. But, we need to be focused on energy. We need to be focused on things that will actually move us forward in the world economy. I've not seen an energy plan out of this administration. That's the number one thing.
Well, Jane, it's
ever.
Funny you say that. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, they've been all over the news the last couple of days because they're concerned about these tariffs. And when you have a very conservative group like that that is pro-business, that typically has supported many Republicans, anytime there's head of their folks are saying that we have concerns about this, we don't think this is a good idea,
right.
I think that's something to take a note about.
Right. But I do think we have an opportunity
yes,
in this
I
time.
Agree with that. Yes.
In this time and place, we have an opportunity to sort of remake the economy in a way that is forward thinking. I don't think we can go back and say, oh yeah, we're going to compete with China on stereos and TVs, and that ship sailed. We have to get our place. And I think I happen to believe energy.
We have
is
been
the place.
Remaking ourselves as a service economy. Right? We're a
yeah.
service economy.
Mm-hmm.
And that leaves a lot of people, with very little future sometimes. So
yep.
I think there's
right.
been concern about that. But can you remake the economy into into the manufacturing economy or have a better blend? Maybe you can. I'm not saying you can't. But here's what I know. Greg, I think you'd agree. There's so many experts that tell us stuff all the time. There's a lot of experts right now telling us this is, the sky is falling. This is the worst thing ever. And I don't buy that because their credibility is shot. Now, I hope that this recovers. I think we have to give it sometimes one bad day on Wall Street, maybe one bad week, if you want to say that, and it hasn't been a good stretch. But these things do come back, and we're going to have to see where
yet.
The negotiations on the tariffs occur. But there's a lot of panic, and Greg, this too. The exacerbation of all this by the legacy media, they can't wait to root against Trump, and that's what they're doing.
The same people who freaked out about COVID and said that we needed to shut down the entire economy and all
right.
of our schools are the exact same people who are freaking out about this now. I really wish the Democrat Party would put their big boy pants, their big girl pants on, and figure out a way to get through something without having a mental breakdown.
Okay, you say that, but let's say this in fairness. I think there's Republicans that are going to get a little nervous here. If this continues, if the economy is more jittery, you're going to hear from a lot more Republicans that are maybe not going to be
especially
as public about their feelings.
Especially as we get through the primaries.
Well, right. that's right. But that's yeah. why we're doing, let's talk about the politics here, because that's one of the reasons this is happening now, right? Because they're keenly aware that the time is ticking away and that 26 in the fall of 26 will be here before you know it,
get
right?
Something.
So that's one of the
reasons
you don't want this a year from now
Congress.
Hanging out where it looks like you're going to get smoked in Congress.
Well, happily, under Barack Obama and under Joe Biden, the Democrats decided that we should do absolutely everything through government, through executive fiat, through executive orders. So that's what we will continue to do, whether we are in charge of the Senate or the House or not. We will just jam it down your throat the exact same way you jammed down our throat for the last roughly 12 years, and we'll just continue doing what we're doing.
Well, that's the thing, though. What are you going to jam down people's throats? I'm waiting for the plan.
Tariffs. Doge.
Well, he can do that already. Doge, he can do that.
I know.
He doesn't need
that's
Congress.
Exactly my point.
But that's not. Look, I'm all for Doge. Anybody who is against getting rid of fraud, waste, and abuse is a fool. Okay.
Thank you, Jane.
I'm all for
Thank
that.
Thank you, Jane.
And I think Democrats are way off. I don't care about Elon. It doesn't matter. Okay. What matters is what is done. I don't care who does it. I don't care why he does it. What is being done? And I love it. But at some point, ripping apart government is going to have to translate into some other policy. That in and of itself, you could fire every federal employee and you're not covering the debt. So at some point,
that's
you
true.
Have to do more.
We have to have serious conversations
have
about entitlements.
So.
I don't see that being willing
and
to happen.
And so is that what it's going to be? Are we just going to cut? What is the move forward?
Well, the move would be tariffs are going to produce the revenue in theory. But if that reduces demand for those foreign products, then how does that work out? I'm not good
Correct.
At math, Greg.
There are two sides of the economy. There's the non-productive side, which is government, and there's the productive side, which is the private sector. And for every single person you fire from the federal government, that is potentially one more worker, that much more productivity going into the actual productive side of the economy, which is anything other than government. Government does not create prosperity. Government retards prosperity. And so every single person that we fire who is a government employee is going to benefit this country long term as they transit. They're going to learn to code, as you guys may remember that term. They're going to learn to code. They're going to go into actually productive industries. They're going to redound to the economic credit of this country.
That's Greg Keller. Jane Duker is here. John Gaskin. It's a live Reardon Roundtable Fish Fry Fridays in Brentwood this afternoon. St. Mary Magdalene, we would love to see you. Let's talk a little bit about the elections this week. Let's start with Wisconsin. I lived there for almost 10 years. I know the state pretty well. It is a little weird. They elect Supreme Court judges. Mm-hmm. But let's talk math here, too, because I always made the point, if you go back to 2016 and Trump's small victory in Wisconsin, it was mainly because voters did not turn out for Hillary. There were 250,000 fewer voters for Hillary than there was for Obama in 2012. In this week's election, and it's human nature, people don't come out for April midterms. Elections. So yeah. There were literally a million fewer people in Wisconsin that cast ballots on Tuesday than they did in November. And 680,000 of them were Republicans. So about 250,000 fewer for the Democrat, 680,000 for the Republican. Susan Crawford wins that race. But I don't think it's a judgment
angry
on Trump
vote.
Because, well, maybe.
And we'll see that this coming
Wisconsin
Tuesday.
Wisconsin is not a purple state. They are a blue state. And
yes.
Here's what we learned. Greg, I want your opinion on this. Some people just won't come out if Trump's not on the ballot.
Yeah, I mean, the new Republican coalition is driven by low propensity voters. These are people who are turning out during presidential election years. They're not turning out during off presidential election years, and they are especially not turning out for special elections in off years. If Donald Trump is not the top of the ticket, you're going to see Republicans hurt. That has been the case for some time. Now, one thing that we didn't mention is that we did pass voter ID in Wisconsin.
Overwhelmingly.
That is a very strong case for the Republican Party in terms of their future prospects in the state of Wisconsin, because it is very difficult in a Midwestern, God-fearing state like Wisconsin for Democrats to get elected if they can't cheat.
You know, it's funny. I left there in 2006. Oh, I left Milwaukee, and we were talking about voter ID back then, and it was controversial back and
it's
forth.
Like a so never
they enshrined it in the Constitution, by the way. That's one of the different things.
Yeah. Do I think Wisconsin means, oh, my gosh, the midterms are going to be – we don't know yet if that's going to be a shellacking. I mean, I think time will tell. I don't think this sort of – it's not even midterm. You know, I don't put
a whole
lot of –
Well, the Florida races went to the Republicans, so there wasn't any
major
upsets.
They were competitive. But that was probably because, again, here we are at these – now.
Well, sometimes it's – you know this. Sometimes it's the quality of the candidate, too. And Brad Schiebel, I check with people. I don't know Brad. He was the former attorney general up there. I asked several people I know in Wisconsin, is he a good candidate? They gave him a B, you know, so he wasn't –
He was fine.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think it's just that the math did not favor the Republican in that race.
I think in St. Louis, there's going to be change. Mm. And I think – I would not want to be an incumbent right now in St. Louis.
Well, hold your thoughts
it's
on
the
that
year
because
of
that's going to be my favorite segment this afternoon, talking about Tish and her going away, but we're going to do that coming up next. It's a live Reardon Roundtable. Come out and see us. They'll start serving fish in just a little bit. They're cooking it up right now. We're live at St. Mary Magdalene in Brentwood. Hey, we are live at Fish Fry Friday. This is the fifth stop on our tour. We are going to be in Millstadt, Illinois next week, which is going to be a lot of fun. Jane Duker is on the panel this afternoon. John Gaskin, who is a Democrat lobbyist in Jeff City. Greg Keller, Republican consultant and founder of Atlas Strategy Group. John, I'll start with you here. I know Jane wants to probably start on this round, but Tish is on the ballot against Kara Spencer. It's the final runoff for mayor of St. Louis. It is looking very likely that she's not only going to lose, but maybe in record fashion, right?
Well, it's going to be a very historic race, no matter how you look at it. I think voters in the city of St. Louis, people across the breadth and width of this region, even across the river, are tired of the status quo. They're looking for real, suitable change. We've got a lot of cash in the city of St. Louis from the Ram settlement, infrastructure dollars, COVID dollars, the Northside grant program. And how do you have that kind of cash in the bank? And yet we are able to show very little in terms of what we're able to do. Most mayors talk about declining revenues and making cuts, yet we have plenty of cash sitting somewhere and we can't even get it out the door. That's a problem. People are tired. People, when they look at the end of the year, they look at what they paid in earnings tax. People are looking and saying, what am I getting for what I'm paying in?
Amen.
And, I think, and it was a double whammy because you saw right in front of you what happened during the storm and failure to pick up trash and all of these things.
I mean, you had people on the north side and south side who needed to get to dialysis who could not get there because the streets were literally a sheet of ice.
Yep.
I mean, and now you even have an even greater question now regarding the temperament of people that are in leadership.
Amen.
I mean, come on, guys. We need folks who are ready to lead on day one.
Serious.
Who want to take our region to where we need to go.
Can Kara do that?
Well, I believe, here's what I'll say. Kara's a numbers person. She's humble. She's a kind person. I believe she's willing to roll up her sleeves and get to work. Humility goes a long way in public service. People want to know that, A, you care about me. B, you're not going to turn your back on my community when the going gets tough. And the reality is, I think, you know, the last primary showed where folks see things going.
I had some people this week that said, we can talk about Tish, I know you want to talk, but that Kara is a bit of a micromanager. Is that could potentially be a problem?
Yeah, I mean, look, it takes a lot to be an executive. You have to have the right blend of managing and the right blend of delegating. And so I think we're going to see a lot, when we see who her staff is.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think a lot of people are looking to that to say, okay, who is going to surround her? I know we saw some of the, in the Business Journal, yeah, they talked about some of the people that surround her, but are they really going to be the ones running government? She better get serious about getting serious people to run this government because she can't do it by herself.
You know, one of the challenges, though, is I had some interesting conversations just about the future of the city with some people this week that will go nameless, but you have probably a pretty big challenge in attracting talent because
Absolutely.
Of the money that you're paying people,
yeah,
and then you throw in the crime issue and everything else, and that's a big issue. The economic engine is not there for the city of St. Louis. There's no growth in the city, so that's a big problem.
Well, when you have major companies that are blocks across the street from the MAC that meet with a leader in the city and say, we need to really get serious about crime, and you blow them off, what does that
Correct.
Say about the
yes.
jobs and the people that pay the earnings tax to live in the city?
Right.
I mean, we have to get real about, do we want these people in our region? Because it's too easy for them to go to Nashville, Dallas, the list
right.
goes
I
on.
I think you're right about that, Greg.
St. Charles.
I'm Tish. Let's
right
start with her.
The river. Yeah.
Well, and John, rightly so, mentions a state like, or a city rather, like Nashville. I mean, I think this is somewhere where Mike Kehoe can show some leadership, where Republicans in the legislature can show some leadership. If you can't get your tax policy right, you're not going to draw employers. They are not going to draw. They are not going to bring employees. Missouri's income tax, both at the state level and at the state corporate level, are too high. The Missouri Republicans are focused on getting that lower so we can start drawing some people into the state. And job one, I would say, John, I'm not saying we're going to do it, but it would be great if we get rid of that earnings tax and we stop penalizing employers and employees simply by virtue of the fact that they happen to live in the city.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I think people want the basics. Okay, we have to get down to
That's right.
picking up the trash, picking up the snow,
cutting the grass,
making people feel safe.
And getting the fence down around City
Thank
Hall.
Thank you. Yeah.
And don't put up bollards instead of having police on the street. We have turned policing into a reactionary mess. And so instead of being on the street, preventing crime, mm-hmm. showing a presence, because you know what? You got like a 10% chance of getting caught. The criminals are more organized than the police. That is a problem. And so that's number one. And I appreciate Governor Kehoe. Without his leadership, we would not have gotten board control of the police department. That you can't say that enough. We've been working on it for 5 years. Mm-hmm. It finally happened. There's a step. If the city is unable to govern itself, I think the governor is going to have to be in a position where he says the state cannot survive our economic engine going down a rat hole. And so, I mean, I understand the Cardinals, you know, they've been winning, and we still don't have people down there. I know that there's weather. I'm willing to wait and see, but we had record low turnout at the Cardinal game when they're winning. Now, people are going to see the Blues, so that's good, mm-hmm. but I am nervous that people are getting used to not going downtown, and it's going to be that much harder
that's
to get
challenge.
Them back.
It is, absolutely.
And the Board of Aldermen, if we don't get change at the Board of Aldermen, which I'm really hoping for, if we don't get rid of 8 votes for Megan Green, downtown is going to continue to suffer.
Because I don't follow that as much with the numbers. Handicap that in a way that we can understand. There's a couple other Board of Aldermen
There's
elections,
There's a couple
right?
races that are important. There is the Annie Schweitzer and Tony Kirchner race. She was the one who called the sheriff and had the sheriff, you know, roll the dice for her opponent, you know, that whole fiasco. Then you have Alicia Sonier, who is a very reliable Megan Green to Shara vote. She's the one who had the homeless bill that said you could defecate and urinate wherever you want. I don't know why greater,
awesome.
I don't know why Greater St. Louis wanted to give her $13,000 to get reelected, but I guess we can talk about that at another time. Those two votes, right now she has a reliable 8 votes to push anything through. If one of those seats turns, then Megan will have to work very hard to get her agenda through. And we saw at the end of the last session that when she didn't get her way on the Rams money, I mean, she shuts it down. She did not do well when she didn't get her way. That's what we need, because her way is full-blown, ignore downtown. Nobody cares about potholes. We're going to, like, provide child care for city employees and for her.
The 30,000-foot view here is that St. Louis has a weak mayoral system. And the president of the Board of Aldermen, Megan Green, is a carpetbagging communist.
Yes.
And it's all fine and well if we get rid of Tashara Jones and replace her with Kara Spencer. The question is, how is Kara's mayoral things that she wants to accomplish going to be different from Tashara? And is she going to be able to accomplish those with a carpetbagging communist like Megan Green in charge of a very powerful Board of Aldermen? I'm skeptical.
You know what's funny about that is that ordinarily, especially with Keller, I'd say, you know, that's just hyperbole.
It's not.
It's like 100% accurate.
I'm a Democrat, and it's not hyperbole. Because here's the thing. She's been in St. Louis for 20 years. And 11 of those years, she's either been on the Board of Aldermen or she's been the president. And she's like, we need more time. No, you've had 11 years, and things have gotten worse. So that's it.
What's going to happen if she loses, if Tish loses? A couple of questions here. How does she react? Does she go quietly? I don't think she does go quietly, right? Someone told me last week, the wig's coming off.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be an ugly departure.
And I hope so.
I certainly, no matter what happens, whoever wins, whoever loses, there's a lot of work to do. And whoever the winner is, I hope that they are willing to work with folks on all parts of the city. I think we still have an election to be ran on Tuesday. I think we ought not
get presumptive. People have to vote. That's
right.
But
the bottom line is this. I'm hopeful that the mayor loves the city of St. Louis. She loves this region. We can't deny that.
Not really. But, she leaves it a lot.
Yeah, she's never here.
Never. She travels a ton. So
nevertheless,
that makes
I hope that folks will come to the table for a peaceful transition of power and be willing to work together to make things work. Will
yes.
that happen? Maybe unlikely.
What does she do next? Maybe that's for next week, but...
Yeah. Well, I she's already shown that she's very unhappy. See, this is the thing. I think her election was pretty... I think people thought this was going to be difficult to get her out, right? Then everything went to heck in a handbasket really quickly. And I think what the snowstorm did, yes, snowstorms can get you thrown out of office. But what it did was it represented the failures.
Yeah.
And
yes.
people started connecting yes. the dots.
It opened the hood on
yes.
of the car
yes.
to see what is not working in the city.
And at that yes. point, it was too late for her to switch.
Well, and
so that's
Jane,
the
you have a point. Because then you had a situation where there were rats and
yes,
all kinds
yes.
of critters with trash
right.
and transportation challenges. And then you have a situation where you have an unhoused lady, God rest her soul,
dies at the
feet of
the
government building right there
yes.
on a warming vent.
One
thing we have to give credit to is Lyda Crewson. She got those buses up and going
she
to
did.
Care about our unhoused.
That did not happen.
We have
under
got
Lyda.
To get that issue together. We had a client in town just a couple of weeks ago who asked us, what's about the fencing? Are you guys expecting a fair
Look,
or a
John,
festival?
I've been
it
talking
is
about
embarrassing.
It. I've been talking about it for 18 months. I've been the only one because
Church
it's ridiculous.
Church of God in Christ, one of the biggest denominations of African Americans, is coming back to our town, I believe later this year or 2026.
Get rid of the
we
fences.
We have to get that down. That is embarrassing. And it says that we got real issues that are beyond the pale.
Kara knows that. I've talked to her about it. That's symbolic as well. We got
to
take a break. We're coming back here with one more segment of the Reardon Roundtable live on Fish Fry Friday, St. Mary Magdalene in Brentwood. Come see us. The fish starts at 4:30 until 7:30. All right, we're live at Fish Fry Fridays today at St. Mary Magdalene Parish on South Brentwood. It's a little soggy out there. The rain has picked up again. They're going to start serving the fish here in about 45 minutes. We'd love to see you come by and say hi. We have on the panel Jane Duker. Jane's going to hang out for a live Sue's News and some other fun stuff this afternoon. Greg Keller is here, Republican consultant, founder of Atlas Strategy Group. John Gaskin, Democrat lobbyist in Jeff City. One thing that we didn't address in the previous segment, we'll get to some other topics here as we close things out, but I asked the question, how was Tish going to handle her potential defeat? How is her dad going to handle the defeat? I mean, he doesn't handle anything well, Jane.
No, it's not going to go well. And since he's basically the one running City
Hall. Is that an understatement?
Yeah. He's basically the one running City Hall, so it's very frustrating for him to have to give up the power that he's amassed while she's been mayor. So I think I for one am very glad that he'll be gone.
John, you want to chime in on that one?
Hey, look.
I saw a reaction when I asked the question.
Look, I've gone round and round with Mr. Jones and Ms. Jones over the years, and I'll say this much. We have to be so careful about how we treat people.
Yep.
Especially when they're going up and down the hills.
Vervis
and valleys
doesn't,
of
right?
Well,
no, he's you know.
You think. But look, I mean, it's not fun when the rabbit's got the gun.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I appreciate John's sentiment in saying that, but Vervis is a garbage human. The good news is that he's got a very fine house, apparently, in O'Fallon that he can fall back on.
Oh, wow. Well, but you know what, though? He's probably going to stay in the city where he gets his streets plowed when nobody else does.
Hey, we didn't mention the comptroller race. Let's talk about that because Donna did very well a couple of weeks ago. She has to square off again with Darlene Green. This is another one of those issues, though, I think that people want change, right? And there's been incompetency in that office. Donna's run a good campaign. She's probably out there knocking on doors in the rain right now. But there's an expectation that she wins, right?
I mean, I think she has a really good shot. I think if you look at the turnout in the city, I've been looking at it, and the areas, I think the South City is really coming out again. You know, my point is the people who are angriest are the ones that come out and the people that want change. And I think that we're feeling that in this region. People are fed up. And I think they think, you know, she has been the comptroller since Vervis Jones went to jail.
It's amazing, isn't it?
I mean, I want everyone to get their head around that. And I think people are like, hey, wait a minute. You know, maybe we do need to try something different. There's some structural issues and things.
But again, emphasize, this is a very important position.
Oh, yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
The role on the board, right?
I mean, it's critical. Look, I like Ms. Green. I respect her a lot. She is certainly qualified. She's one of the nicest people in politics in this country. I do believe that. It will really come down. You have two qualified candidates. I think Ms. Green definitely knows what she's doing. She's gotten older, but she's certainly seasoned. She knows how to run her office. And when you have a new situation where you have some new members of ENA, it is good to have some experience. On the other hand, I will say this. You know, I've known Ms. Behringer since she was in the General Assembly. She's a tremendously hard worker.
Yes, she is.
And it's going to come down to who can get their base out. And Jane mentioned, the bottom line is this, an agitated and angry voter is the person who's going to go vote early, and they're going to go vote often.
Yeah.
And it will come down to who can get their base out.
Yep.
One other thing I forgot to mention in the previous segment, and we just have to highlight this a little bit, is a week ago, last weekend, Tashara brought Brandon Johnson, the mayor of Chicago, in town to knock doors, and they did videos. Talk about a lack of self-awareness of where things are, but I guess that's where they think their support is coming from,
well,
John?
Jane, you know this, and you know this, Greg. When you're in government, you have to have people around you who are allowing you to be self-aware, because sometimes we get so insulated from the reality of the issue, right? And, you know, somebody with 80% approval rating...
Disapproval rating. He has a favorable of 6.6%.
That is not good.
Wow.
That is not good. When you're fighting for your political life, you don't bring someone on life support to come and help you.
And John's exactly right. This is right on the heels of the 2024 nationwide crime statistics coming out that showed St. Louis number one in the nation of major cities in per capita murders, Chicago number one in total murders. I'll take you back to that St. Louis number. We were number one in per capita murders, a full 40% higher than the second place city of Memphis. And the fact that she brought him in a week before Election Day was, to John's point about being in a bubble, completely political tin ear.
Well, and what's amazing to me, too, is, you know, now that board control has passed, the chief has decided that he's going to be a little bit more honest
about
the crime. He had an epiphany.
Isn't it amazing how that works?
I know.
Wow.
Funny.
And he said, well, and finally... Thankfully, a reporter actually tested him and said,
what?
Wait a minute, you're cherry-picking numbers, you're cherry-picking time frames, you're not comparing apples to apples and oranges to oranges because you're declining population, you can't compare yourself in raw numbers. And he had to admit, well, if you actually compare us to other cities, we're not doing so well.
Right, go figure. No one could have figured that out. Keller, we have to talk about this new book, Fight. All these people who knew darn well that Joe Biden could barely get a sentence out, that he had to have fluorescent tape on the grounds to see where he was going to walk. That at one point I heard Jonathan Allen talk about how there were people, including his chief of staff, that felt like he was in a meeting talking about NATO, that he might have thought that he wasn't president, that he was in charge of NATO. That's actually in this book.
It's the largest scandal in the history of American presidential politics. It wasn't just that his chief of staff and the DNC and United States Democrat senators were covering for him. It's that all of the Democrat talking points people were doing exactly the same. And I will not name names, although some of them are sitting here at the table with me right now. There were Democrat talkers who swore up until the very last moment that this man was sentient when he could not get off or on of a bike or go up or down a flight of stairs. I hope the Democrats learn something from this shameful chapter in their history.
Dude, you need new talking points.
No,
Jane, your guy's
it
president
is, it
now.
Is the biggest scandal. I mean, the way that this is, all of a sudden your party has some interest in national security when this guy let millions of people across the border, and nobody for 3.5 years, and now we know from two different books, that he wasn't competent and able to do the job. That was covered up?
Well, no one was accidentally texting war plans to folks that
right.
shouldn't
have. He managed to not do that.
You know, look, Joe Biden has
really,
this
you want to talk
well.
About the exit from Afghanistan? Let's talk about that. Let's talk about how that plays as opposed to a signal leak that I still think was serious. We talked about it last week. Yeah. I'm not minimizing that, but that story seems to have gone away because nobody has any money anymore.
So I mean, right.
We're not going to talk about signal very much. Let's talk about something really positive, okay?
The
St. Louis Blues. Oh, my goodness. Last night, I tuned in just in time. I was watching the beginning of the game. There's 60 seconds left. Unfortunately, they tie it, goes into overtime. So the Blues look like they have the victory. Goes into overtime. They get in a power play in overtime, which is kind of funny because then they add a player. And they score, and they win that game 11 in a row. This is amazing right now. And by the way, I'm disappointed because I went to ESPN this morning, the front page. I do that every day. There's 15 stories or so on the side of the ESPN page. It's ridiculous that the St. Louis Blues, this is a national story. Yeah. It's one of the best sports stories in the country right now.
They forgot us when this happened in 19.
That's
you know,
true.
We
you got
sneak,
a point there.
And it's, you know, it's like we come out of nowhere and everyone's going, is this going to be 19? Is this going to, I hope so.
It's possible.
Oh my goodness. I mean, whatever
it
this,
feels like it.
Whatever
well,
this coach
with,
has done.
It's different right now and it's a lot of fun.
I worry
great.
About the Dylan Holloway injury. He has been playing like one of the top players in the entire NHL of late. They're saying now he's going to be out for a couple games. I hope it only goes
only
that far.
Only a couple games, right. I mean, this coach, I don't know what he did, but there is something that lit the fire and God bless him.
So the Cardinals are about to lose today in Boston. They've actually they made a good run of it earlier, but it's 12-6. So it looks like the Red Sox are going to win their home opener. I guess you never know. They go six runs in the ninth. But let's say that it's been a better start than maybe we expected for the Cardinals.
Absolutely.
Certainly it was a great, you know, three-game homestand, and then things fell apart a little bit earlier this week. Frustrating thing about those early two games on Monday and Tuesday, they were winnable games. They had them won.
Yeah.
But that's baseball. That's what's going to happen. But we do have some optimism here in St. Louis, especially when it comes to the Blues. Gang, thank you so much. Gaskin,
absolutely.
It's great to see you. John has been, every time I see him, you're leaner and meaner. Oh. You're on this health kick. You look great.
Well, you know, look, I don't love Trump too much, but make America healthy.
Nah, there you go. We'll get you a MAHA hat. Keller, great to see you.
Thank you.
And your hair. And Jane is going to hang out in the next hour. We have a lot of stuff to talk about. Sue's going to do Sue's News. We'll visit with Robbie Montz, who's the fish fry guru here at St. Mary Magdalene. Paul Hall has entertainment recommendations, including, this is interesting to me, a movie with Naomi Watts and Bill Murray. And Val Kilmer passed away, so we'll get some reaction to that as well. We're coming back. And the 4 o'clock hour, we'll wrap things up for this hour live at Fish Fry Fridays.
Get more at 971talk.com.